ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
The 10 sons of Maharaj Priyavrat were named Agnidra, Admajiva, Yajnabahu, Mahavir, Hiranyaretha, Gritaprishta, Savan, Medhatiti, Vitihotra, and Kavi. These are also names of of Agni, the fire god. Ete sham kavir mahavira sabana iti traya asan urvareta chasta atma vidyayam arbhavad arabhya krita parichaya paramahamsyam evashramam abhajam. Three among these 10, namely Kavi, Mahavir, and Savana, lived in complete celibacy. Thus trained in brahmachari life from the beginning of childhood, they were very conversant with the highest perfection, known as the Paramahamsa Ashram. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word urdvaretasaha in this verse is very significant. Urdvareta refers to one who can control sex life and who, instead of wasting semen by discharging it, can use this most important substance accumulated in the body to enrich the brain. One who can completely control sex life is able to work wonderfully with his brain, especially in remembering. Thus, students who simply hear Vedic instructions once from their teacher could remember them verbatim without needing to read books, which therefore did not exist in former times. Another significant word is arba bhavat, which means from very childhood. Another meaning is from being very affectionate to children. In other words, Paramhamsa life is dedicated for the benefit of others. Just as a father sacrifices many things out of affection for his son, great saintly persons sacrifice all kinds of bodily comforts for the benefit of human society. In this connection, there is a verse concerning the six Goswamis. Tyaktva tura namashesha mandala pati shrenim sadatu chavat Bhutva dina ganesha kau karunaya kopina kantasrito. Because of their compassion for the poor fallen souls, the six Goswamis gave up their exalted positions as ministers and took vows as mendicants, thus minimizing their bodily wants as far as possible. They each accepted only a loincloth and a begging bowl. Thus they remained in Vrindavan to execute the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by compiling and publishing various Vaishnav literatures. Three among these 10, namely Kavi, Mahavir, and Savana, lived in complete celibacy. Thus trained in brahmachari life from the beginning of childhood, they were very conversant with the highest perfection known as the Paramhamsa Ashram. Today we are reading from
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, entitled The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrat, Text 25 and 26. In this chapter, Priyavrat, son of Swayambhuva Manu, is living under the guidance of his spiritual master Narada Muni in a secluded forest on a mountain, performing his bhajan, exclusively dedicating all of his energy to meditation and service on the Supreme Lord. However, the descendants of his brother, Uttanapada, who ruled the world, were no longer there to perform their responsibilities. It is interesting because Priyavrat is elder brother. He was entitled to take the seat of the throne of the world. There was no conflict, there was no controversy. He was the exclusive heir to such a very high, powerful, and opulent position, the ruler of the earth, undisputed, and never had to worry about campaigning for an election after a few years. King of the earth, until by his own sweet will, he decided he would like to resign and turn it over to his children. That is the opportunity he had. But he didn't care anything whatsoever for wealth, power, prestige, control over others. He gave everything to his brother. And he went to mountain where he was practically just begging for some food or finding whatever was in the trees or roots from the ground, just living in a spirit of pure devotional service. That is detachment. He saw all the things that material people are longing and striving to achieve as a distraction, a disturbance. He simply wanted the greatest of all opulence, self-realization, loving devotional service to the Lord. Therefore, he offered his life to his spiritual master, Sri Narada Rishi, and performed tapasya for years. In fact, he was up there not just for years, but for generations. And he was completely satisfied. Now, Prabhupada explains that if you're living in a palace and Krishna wants you to live under a tree, then detachment means to give up that palace and live under a tree. However, if you're living under a tree and Krishna wants you to live in a palace, then actual detachment, renunciation, is to live in the palace. Because on the path of bhakti, everything is taken into consideration according to how we could best serve. There's really no other factor. How we could best serve. How we could best serve is how we could best please the Lord. And by pleasing the Lord, we receive the mercy of the Lord.
And all of our spiritual substance is based on that mercy. So when Swayambhuva Manu came to request Priyavrat to give up the ashram of his Gurudev to become the king of the world. Now he was celibate from birth as a brahmachari for so many years, for generations, very empowered. And he had no desire for woman or children or all the enjoyments that come through that. He was self-satisfied. Now Swayambhuva Manu, who's one of the great Mahajans, he's a Grihastha. So naturally, everyone has their nature. He was thinking that the best service that Priyavrat could do was get married, have children, sit on the royal throne of the planet Earth, and rule the world. But Narada Muni, he does not think like that. He's brahmachari, always brahmachari. He was born directly out from Lord Brahma. And from the moment of his appearance in this world, he was simply satisfied chanting the holy names and traveling here and there and everywhere, distributing love of God to even the most difficult people, Valmiki Muni, Mugrari the hunter, and Prahlad, Dhruva, Pachetas, so many people, Prachini Barhishat, fearless, selfless preacher. So his realization was naturally, better Priyavrat does not become entangled. Better you remain brahmachari. And Swayambhuva Manu is seeing from his perspective, better you become grihastha and do very, very substantial service that's required. So Priyavrata Maharaj, he was very much inclined toward his guru's line. He had no inclination. So this was a difficulty, because ultimately, it is the welfare of human society that the Lord is concerned for. So in this situation where there can be no decision made, Lord Brahma appeared, who happens to be the guru of Narada and Swayambhuva Manu, and who everyone will unanimously accept his decision. And Brahma explained that really renunciation is how we could best serve the Lord, and the best service to the Lord is how we could help society. We need a king. There's no one but you that can perform this service properly. If you do it for Krishna, you will not become entangled. So Priyavrata accepted, and Narada Muni gave all blessings, and he became king. Now here is this personality who is living as a sadhu in the jungles for so many generations. And he's ruling the citizens. That means engaged in so many worldly activities. You have to think about the taxes. You have to think about everything that has to do with ruling not only a city or a country, but a planet. He has to design and enforce the laws, the criminal systems, sanitation systems. Everything is there. And it is explained here that Priyavrata Maharaj had 10 children. Because it was his duty. It was his duty as king to create progeny that would help to serve the world. And in today's verse, we have heard the names of the 10 children. And specifically three of them are being discussed: Kavi, Mahavir, and Savana. They decided to follow in the footsteps of the first part of their father's life. Others decided to follow in the footsteps of the second part of their father's life. Mahajano yena gata savanta, we should follow in footsteps. Some followed in the Swayambhuva Manu part of his life, and some followed the Narada Muni part of his life. And Srila Prabhupada has explained that these three children, from the very beginning of their childhood, they were trained as brahmacharis. Prabhupada explains that if properly qualified children are trained from the beginning as brahmacharis, they actually develop a taste for renunciation. It's actually fun for them. When we become conditioned to luxuries and enjoyments, then it's difficult to not have them. Or if we're conditioned to not having them, but everyone aware around you wants them, then there's dissatisfaction. But when you're living amongst people who are just satisfied, just performing their bhajan and doing their service, that is their wealth, that is their satisfaction, then renunciation is very natural. Srila Prabhupada would explain that actually, what does a devotee need? If we're not conditioned to all sorts of artificial attachments, really, Prabhupada said, we're happy just with some association, with the holy name, and with a little prasad. Really, what else do you need in life? Everything else is superficial. It's extraneous. If you see little children, they can go to sleep anywhere. Yes? They don't need beds. Just put them on the floor and they'll go to sleep. They're very happy. But when you get older, even in bed you can't sleep properly. Because they just don't have so many anxieties or attachments. Of course, in order to cultivate that sense of simplicity, the children have to be receiving a lot of protection and love. Otherwise, if they're in any way exploited, then everything will become bitter. So these three personalities, they were trained in brahmachari life from the very beginning, where they just didn't need anything. They were just happy, just serving their guru, chanting Lord's names, meditating on the Lord, and performing service. It's so wonderful. Now, many people who are brahmacharis, after getting such actually good training, with proper care, no exploitation, but actually trained and given the proper principles and the proper experience of renunciation, then many will decide after their training that really I need to get married. To continue in this way is very difficult for me. And with their good training, they become excellent grihasthas. But there are others who are simply satisfied. Yes, it's a struggle to control sex desire. Yes, it's a struggle to live with the simplicity of an ashram. But really, I'm happy with this struggle. I like this struggle. It's meaningful. It's enriching to me. So such a person has the nature of brahmachari. And these three great souls, They, it explains, they were very conversant with the highest perfection known as Paramhamsa Ashram.
Srila Prabhupada is explaining in purport
advantages of such brahmachari life. Two specifically, two very important factors Prabhupada is emphasizing in this extraordinary purport. One is that a brahmachari is in a position where there's no need to waste any time or divert any energies away from the service of the Lord. Because there's really nothing else expected of you except to do your sadhana and to do your seva directly to Guru and Krishna. Grihastha life, as holy and sacred as it is, as far as I have heard, there are several distractions. We want to be always doing direct service to Guru and Krishna for the welfare of the world, but there are practical and necessities we have to deal with. We have to maintain family. That means we have to work. Yes? Especially in Kali Yuga, working very difficult. And in this age, work can be like that of a donkey. Just so much effort, foaming at the mouth just to get some money. And so many worries and anxieties. What if there's not enough? Or what if this happens? And then raising wife, or dealing with husband, and raising children, education, clothes, food, shelter, relatives, in-laws, yes? These are but a few potential distractions to our spiritual life. So brahmachari, all he has is his devotional service. There's nothing else. If he could do it, what a free life. Just do what you're told by guru and your authorities, and you're just directly serving Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas 24 hours a day. That means no energy is diverted anywhere else. It's very concentrated, very focused. That is what Brahmachari Ashram is for. And also, Prabhupada is explaining this precious energy of the semen. If one is able to control that, contain that, it gives one tremendous amount of physical and mental vibrancy. Prabhupada explains, rather than just losing it for sense gratification, you nourish your body, and especially you nourish your brain. Urvareta. That means when one has the power to bring it upward instead of downward, it nourishes the brain and gives us tremendous concentration powers and great memory. Prabhupada explains, when human society was not wasting this precious substance in sense gratification, there was no need for books. Can you imagine a society? No need for books. Whatever you'd hear from your guru, you would remember for the rest of your life. Every word, verbatim. Very powerful. And previously, even grihasthas, because they were so self-controlled in their grihastha ashram, they also had such very powerful memories. What to speak of those who were the paramhamsas? So really, Prabhupada is explaining herein that what brahmachari life is about is not wasting energy. not diverting our energies, either the energy of our time or the energy of the substances within us that could either nourish us or deplete us. And the next part of this purport, Prabhupada is explaining what to do with those energies. Srila Prabhupada explains, Paramhamsa means, Goswami means, in its true sense, that all one's energy goes for the welfare of others on a large scale. Srila Prabhupada says that Arba Bhavat means from very childhood. Another meaning is from being very affectionate to children. In other words, Paramhamsa life is dedicated for the benefit of others. Just as a father sacrifices many things out of affection for his son, great saintly persons sacrifice all kinds of bodily comforts for the benefit of human society. No doubt, to live a life of renunciation means sacrifice. A father or a mother in Grihastha Ashram, they have to sacrifice so much for their children. Yes, it's a big sacrifice. Mental anxieties and worries and concerns, and so much physical efforts to provide for the needs. And then all of them, getting them married and so many things, putting them through school and keeping them in good health. Much energy. But that energy is really sacrificed with genuine concern. So the duty of a person in the renounced order of life is, instead of focusing that energy and sacrificing our life for two or three or four or five people, or maybe 10 people, to give that energy to the entire human society. Now, it is a glorious thing to put our energy into really being responsible and making sacrifices that our family becomes Krishna conscious. That is glorious. But in order for the Grihasthas to have such enlightenment and such encouragement and such, you know, transcendental knowledge, some people have to renounce that role to give their lives to the world. Just like Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was a husband and he had several children. In fact, one of his sons, Vrindavan Chandra, called me last night here at Radha Gopinath Temple. And he's always immersed in trying to somehow or other make ends meet for his family. Yes? So he, but his father, he had a whole family and he was responsible. We read in Srila Prabhupada's Leelamrita how he had to, just to make a living to provide for his family. Sometimes he was in Calcutta, sometimes he had to be stationed to Lucknow, other times he was in Allahabad, Prayag Pharmacy, other times he was working here in Bombay, just close by. Shamsundar Prabhu told me that one time Prabhupada showed him where his shop was. It was somewhere right near Grant Road. And he wishes like anything he could remember exactly where that shop was, because he doesn't remember. But Prabhupada said, this is where I, for many years, I was doing my shop. Just a few minutes from Radha Gopinath Temple, Prabhupada was doing his work. So he was very much sacrificing for the sake of his family. And with whatever time he possibly could, he was always trying to help his guru's mission. In fact, he was one of the prominent personalities who started the first Gaudiya Math here in Bombay, along with Bhakti Saranga Goswami Maharaj and Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj. The three of them worked so much to develop the center. But still, Prabhupada, so much of his energies was going to providing and maintaining his children and his wife. But he understood and he could see the need of the world. Unless he took sannyas, first vanaprastha and then sannyas, his life's energies was not going very far beyond these few people. He was doing much for the world in his service to his guru's mission. But for him to actually accept the whole human society as his children, he would have to renounce the pleasures, and I guess there's some anxieties also, of his grihastha ashram. He did not take sannyas because he was frustrated. He did not take sannyas for his own liberation, because he was already liberated. He took sannyas so that every human being in the world could potentially, he could give them spiritual nourishment as a father would to his child. And that's just what he did. He was living relatively comfortable. He had what he needed. But he gave it up to be living on the Jaladuta, on a cargo ship. Previously, he always had some money. He was a working man. Now he has nothing. He has 40 rupees to go to America and start a worldwide movement. This is real renunciation. He gave up all his money. He gave up all his responsibilities to just a few people so that he could include the world and use his energy for that purpose. And he traveled around the world 13 times preaching the message of Bhagavad Gita. And soon he had thousands and thousands of children. And each of his children felt Prabhupada's love in such a special, powerful way, more than a father could love. Because he had love, not only, he had love for our very souls. We have Malati Prabhu sitting amongst us today. She could explain what type of father Prabhupada was. Who is willing to do that? Just strange people who have no relationship. Different race, different caste, different religion, different nationality, different everything. And is willing to dedicate his life and all of his energy like a father, spiritual father, for their welfare. Spoon feeding, nourishing. That is Paramhamsa, Paramhamsa Ashram. Srila Prabhupada did not renounce the world to just give up anxieties and responsibilities for household life. When Prabhupada gave up his family life, he accepted anxieties and responsibilities millions of times greater to sacrifice for human society. Srila Prabhupada is quoting here the six Goswamis. Tyaktvatura namashesha mandalapati srenim sadatu chavat. Bhutva dina ganesha kao karunaya kopina kantasrito.
They were living in, they were mandalapatis, they were lords. They were powerful people with great opulences. But they gave it all up just to wear simple loincloths, to live under trees. For what purpose? It wasn't for their own purification. It was for the welfare of human society, so that they could set a standard of spiritual principles that people forever will be able to follow.
Narottam Das Thakur, he offers in his prayers, unless we understand the books of the six Goswamis, we can never, ever, ever, by any means, enter into Radha and Krishna's leelas of love, conjugal love. Unless we take the dust of the feet of the Goswamis, which really means following in their example, we can never understand what is Vrindavan. Anybody can go to Vrindavan by plane ticket or train ticket. You can even walk there. But to actually understand Vrindavan, we must follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. Therefore, the six Goswamis lived in such a simple way just to set a standard for the world to follow according to their capacity. And to give all of their energy into writing these wonderful literatures and excavating holy places so that everyone for all time will benefit. They were in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, Sachimata prayed to him. We saw that very nice drama directed by Vishakha Mataji, that Sachimata is begging Lord Chaitanya, why do you want to take sannyas and leave home? You have an old mother, and the first thing that will happen to your mother is she will die if you leave. She wasn't threatening. Sometimes mothers threaten like this. Almost every brahmachari has heard this from their mothers. If you join the ashram, I will lay under a train, or I will take poison and I will die. So far, none have died. In fact, usually they end up becoming devotees and proud of their sons after some time. But Sachimata was just speaking reality. I cannot live in separation. And what about your wife? She was less than 16 years old. She's absolutely chaste and faithful. Her only goal and her only purpose in life is to serve you and please you. What about her heart? What will you do? And you have so many friends. Srivas, Advaita, Gadadhar, Nityananda, Prabhu, Haridas Thakur, they are all here. Every night, all day you're with them chanting and singing. All night you're with them chanting and singing. Mahaprabhu established Harinam Sankirtan and Navadvip for the benefit of the whole world. What is lacking? It's not that Lord Chaitanya had a job. He already gave up his teaching of grammar even when he started after taking initiation in Gaya from Ishwarapuri. He just couldn't teach grammar anymore, although he was the most successful and popular grammar. He had thousands and thousands of students. All he wanted to do was Harinam Kirtan. That's all. Harikatha Hari Kirtan. That was his life with his devotees. It's already renunciation. And so happy. Why did he take sannyas? Give up his beautiful hair, his beautiful clothes, his ornaments, his wonderful house with his loving wife and mother and all of his friends. Why? He took sannyas for the exclusive reason of serving society in a more comprehensive way. There were some envious people who he could not reach in Navadvip. What to speak of all the people in South India and everywhere else? He wanted to simply reach more and more and more people for compassion. His motivation was compassion. Therefore, he took sannyas. And he followed the principles very strictly in a spirit of compassion. That's all. And all the six Goswamis, they all met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after he took sannyas. They understood that spirit of compassion that he had. He renounced everything for the welfare of human society. And they wanted to assist him. They wanted to be instruments of his compassion. Therefore, they renounced everything. Bhutva dina ganeshakau karunaya gopina kantasrito. They gave up their royal dress, their fine foods, and their big, beautiful palaces to wear simple kopans, to beg for some madhukari, for some dry rotis, as beggars, and to live on the cold, hard ground under a tree. Out of compassion, to be instruments of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's compassion. And it is because of that sacrifice of Lord Chaitanya and because of the sacrifice of the six Goswamis that all of us are here today, worshipping Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, chanting the holy names, and we have all the facilities and everything we need to perfect our lives in this very life. They've given us everything by their sacrifice. And the great acharyas, so many of them followed in this footprints. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he never considered anything but being an instrument of his father's compassion. Now Thakur Bhakti Vinod, he was Paramhamsa. He had 10 children, like Priyavrat, 10 children. And wife, Bhagavati Devi. And he performed his worldly duties. But how much of his energy went into being an instrument of Lord Chaitanya's compassion? He was such a supernaturally empowered personality that he put more energy into human society's welfare, supreme welfare, para upakar, giving them Krishna consciousness, than practically any sannyasi can do. Even though he had his job for the British government and he had his wife and children, 10 of them, what kind of a personality? How many books did he write? How many songs and poems did he write? Thousands. Thousands of beautiful songs that Gaudiya Vaishnavas all over the world are singing every day, even now. How many people he influenced, how many people he preached to through his writings, through his developing Namhata preaching programs. Incredible. And above and beyond all that, he had a son, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who would renounce everything and give his exclusive energy. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although he was the greatest of sannyasis, He always considered that he was simply assisting his father, who was grihastha with 10 children and wife. But the magnitude of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's compassion to human society and the amount of energy that he sacrificed. Bhaktivinoda Thakur may have had 10 children, but every human being in the creation was like his child. He was writing and giving example and preaching in such a way for everyone. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj happened to be the very personification of renunciation in the mood of loving separation from Radha and Krishna. But he worshipped and honored Bhaktivinoda. He was not ordinary grihastha. He was Paramhamsa grihastha. Paramhamsa Babaji, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, what was his renunciation? In his earlier life, he was a grain merchant, and he was married when he was a small child. That's the way it was in East Bengal in those days. And he took care of his wife very nicely, but then his wife died of natural causes. So immediately after she left her body, he immediately took Babaji Paramhamsa initiation from this Bhagavat Das Babaji, who was a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And he went to Vrindavan. And for over 30 years, he just did tapasya in Vrindavan. And then he was thinking, in his humility, that if I really want to attain perfection, I should go to Navadvip. Because Vrindavan is such a high place, but Navadvip is a place where mercy comes unconditionally to all. So he lived the rest of his life in Navadvip Dham. And you know the stories of how he lived. He was so absorbed in ecstatic emotions of love for Krishna. He would just chant all day long. And as far as eating, he just didn't even care about eating. Sometimes when he felt, you know, some nourishment was required, he'd just stick his hand in the Ganges and pick up some mud and eat a handful. Thus, then he'd forget eating for some days. But he renounced. Materialistic people would come and ask him for benedictions, chase them away. And even that was too much trouble. So he started living where people would pass stool. The Kuliya Dharamshala, he lived in a stool room. Nobody wants to go there and get his darshan. Even people would come, he would keep it locked. Very, very detached person. Yet he would regularly come to Godramdweep, to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, to hear him recite Srimad Bhagavatam, to get the blessings and the mercy of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. And he would sometimes sleep right there in a corner of Bhaktivinoda's house. Bhaktivinoda Thakur made a little kutir for Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He would stay there just to be close to him. This was his renunciation. Yes, he was a family man, but he put so much immense energy into being an instrument of Lord Chaitanya's compassion for the whole world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, living with his family, was envisioning. He discovered Mahaprabhu's birthplace at Yogapeet and built a temple to invite the whole world. He was writing books and sending them abroad. Books about Lord Chaitanya's teachings. He sent them to Macmillan University and universities in America and Europe. Such a vision. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, just to try to help his father with his vision, he renounced everything of the world as a Paramhamsa sannyasi. The spirit was the same.
And for that same purpose of being an instrument of Lord Chaitanya's compassion, as the servant of the servant of the servant, our beloved Srila Prabhupada renounced everything to give all of his energies for the welfare of the world.
Sometimes Prabhupada would say that I had, what did he have, four or five children? Huh? Prabhupada would say, I had 4 or 5 children. He said, now I have thousands of children. And Prabhupada said, and you are all better. Yes? Krishna took away a few children to give me thousands and thousands of children. And now Prabhupada has tens and thousands of grandchildren. And hopefully he'll have millions of great-grandchildren. And tens of millions of great-great-grandchildren. Haribo, that is his... And he's compassionately and lovingly giving his blessings and protecting all of those who have taken shelter at his lotus feet as the servant of the servant of his servants. So the spirit of this principle is all important. That the greatest service we can do for God is to give his mercy to others. Krishna tells in Gita, one who gives my message to others is most dear to me. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the order that he wanted every town and every village throughout the world to be resounding with the chanting of the holy name. So it is most important to understand the essence of what is being discussed. Selfless service. That is what it is about. Selfless service. To be willing to suffer ourselves to help someone else. To be willing to go through difficulties and austerities to give another person Krishna consciousness. That is the real meaning of renunciation. That is the real spirit of renunciation. If we're renounced and we're attached to facility, if we renounce family and all of these other things and we take the role of a renunciate, but we're attached to facility, or we're attached to prestige, or we're attached to position, we've missed the whole point. One in the renounced order of life is willing to suffer the pains of giving up sense gratification, which is never easy until you're an enlightened soul. When you come to that platform of Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharasya Dehina Rasabhara Jamarasopyasya Padam Drisvani Vartate, when you actually come to that platform of experiencing the higher taste, that ruchi, where you're just experiencing ecstatic bliss, just chanting Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna, seeing the deity and doing some service, then there's nothing but happiness. But until we come to that platform, it's difficult. We have to give up so much. We have to struggle a lot. But why? What is the reason? Not simply for my own salvation, for the welfare of others. servant of the servant of the servant, instrument of compassion of Guru and Krishna
and Gauranga.
That is why we do it. So it should not be polluted, it should not be contaminated with the most formidable forms of sense gratification. Our lust,
profit, adoration, and distinction.
Did you ever hear of what the word, just think about what this means? Because the acharyas have very perfectly worded things. Prabhupada says profit, adoration, and distinction. These are the words of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and they're translated from the words of the six Goswamis and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First of all, there's this kama, or sexual desires, which is a very formidable drive, which is very difficult to overcome. Those in the renounced order are willing to battle against it by just utilizing all their senses and their mind and keeping it focused on devotional service. But then three other principles come to attack us. Desire for profit, adoration, distinction. Adoration means, people will think you're very wonderful. They will glorify you, they will appreciate you, they will give their hearts to you. Adoration. They will chant your names. But today we'll speak something briefly about distinction. What does distinction mean? It means to be distinct. Yes? What does distinct mean? Does anyone have any idea of what Webster's dictionary would say about distinct? Anyone? Huh? Different. Huh? Separate identity. Anyone else like to say their realization of what distinct means? It means different than everyone else, something better, something special, distinct. So distinction means you're being kind of separated from the rest. Yes? When you're in college and you get a distinction. Yes? They have those? What does it mean? Give microphone to Brishabhanu Prabhu. He will explain what that means. Here we're going to hear from someone who received many distinctions.
One fares much better than others in examination or acquit oneself with great distinction. Sometimes it is related to marks. If you get above 75%, you have got distinction. That way.
So that means you're distinct, you're different from others. Yes?
Yes, Maharaj.
So these are the three causes of downfall on the subtle platform. Profit, adoration, and distinction. That means to present ourselves as something very different. And we have this inner craving for distinction. But Prabhupada, he said, I'm just repeating what my spiritual master said without adding or subtracting anything. This is my only qualification. That means he really didn't care about any distinction. He wasn't trying to prove himself to be some special acharya. He was just repeating the words of his spiritual master. Like a postman, just delivering the message. But sometimes, of course, we have to examine our own hearts. Sometimes we want to do special things different.
Now, if we're really doing it just to enliven the society of devotees, then that is a spirit of service. But we have to examine our hearts. Am I singing a new melody that nobody has heard before, so I'm getting distinction? Or am I speaking from scriptures or speaking different types of analogies or stories from places where I know no devotees have ever heard this before, so I'm going to give them the nectar, and then I will get distinction, distinct. Is that our motive? If it is, we're going to fall down. We're giving in to subtle lust. Simplicity is the most important quality for a devotee, especially one in the renounced order of life. Simplicity. No desire for adoration or distinction. We're not concerned with being distinct, that I can speak what nobody else has spoken, I can sing what nobody else has done, I can do what nobody else has done. We really have to examine our hearts and be very, very careful that we're not looking for distinction. Because the acharyas say, desire for adoration and distinctions are the roads to fall down, especially when you want it and you get it. Then you're falling in Maya's trap. With all simplicity, we should simply desire to be the servant of the servant of the servant. We should simply want to sacrifice our life without any personal interest to be an instrument of compassion of the great souls. Not to be someone unique or someone special, but just to deliver the message of our spiritual masters honestly and humbly. That is how we can be utilized. Prabhupada, he wasn't praying on Jaladuta to be a unique, distinct acharya. He was praying, Krishna, just let me be your puppet. Let all glory be for you. Just let me be your puppet. Let me repeat your words in such a way that people will understand and their hearts will change. This is Paramhamsa Ashram. And this is how everyone should be striving. Striving. And whenever there's this desire for distinction, then the forest fire, demon, will blaze. Disharmony amongst the Vaishnavas. What happens if several people all want distinction? Then there will be competition and there will be envy. Haribo. Even the garland makers back there, if they want to be distinct, I have made a garland like nobody else has ever made, I will get distinction. If that's your desire, you're in trouble. You should make the best possible garland that you're going to make, not for your own distinction, but for the pleasure of Krishna. Nobody has to know that you made it. Let it just be for the glory of the Lord. Because when we desire distinction, then there is going to be conflict and envy. So real renunciation is the spirit of selfless service, the spirit of just wanting to be the puppet, the instrument of compassion. And therefore, we want to do the best we could do. We want to be the best we could be for our service, not to show ourselves to be something special. And if people think we're something special, do not believe them. I have enough understanding to know that Punarmushtaka Bhava, by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, a little mouse has become a lion, but if I in any way think that it's my power, if I any way try to portray myself rather than just giving the message, then again become mouse. And we have seen so many instances. Is there any questions? Yes, Sri Dhamma Prabhu.
Maharaj, you very wonderfully explained you very wonderfully explained the different roles of in the Grihastha and the Brahmacharya Ashram. Now for those who are in the Grihastha Ashram, it is a very attractive proposition that knowing the responsibilities that come within and other responsibilities, so they know that they're already in the ashram, but they have still a chance of not having children. So it becomes very attractive that, okay, fine, we're somewhere there in the ashram, but we don't want any children, so that we can be a little much more free, because children means a lot of responsibilities. So what is the right way of thinking, and what is the right way of looking at this particular idea?
What do you think?
Many a times, children means definitely a major responsibility. So sometimes it's difficult to understand what is the right thing.
The general principle for Grihasthas is that is their service, to raise Krishna conscious children. There may be exceptions, but that is the general principle. That is the service of a Grihastha, to have children and raise them in pure devotional service. That's generally the first responsibility of a Grihastha, to do like that. Now, there may be exceptional types of people who just want to serve the mission, and that should be honored. But the general principle that most all should follow is that we are married. It is our service to have children in the proper way for Krishna. Does that answer your question? But that's a huge responsibility. To have a child is a huge responsibility. The world is struggling like anything just to fulfill the responsibilities of taking care of the bodies of their children and the emotional needs of their children. Add to that the spiritual needs, and you become a Grihastha. Any other questions? Yes?
Maharaj, you are talking about Priyavrat Maharaj. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, it has been mentioned that Priyavrat, before he accepted Grihastha life, he did lots of austerity for generation and generations. And he was under the care of Narad Muni, and then he accepted Grihastha life. Now he was completely under the guidance of Swayambhu, Manu, Narad Muni, as well as Brahmaji. And he knew it, what is this aim and goal of life also. Yet we see it, that he got entangled in due course of time. Finally, no doubt, he came out of it. But after having such a nice austerity, such a wonderful life in the past, plus getting the guidance of such a three acharyas also, and yet to get entangled, and then unless until he got the mercy of other great souls, then he came out. Then we can compare it ourselves. We are not on that platform. We don't know about such a aim and goal of life, so clear about it. The chances of entangling is much more brighter than what it has been. So in that circumstances, what should we do to see to it nothing goes wrong?
Because he had the proper intention, he was always protected. Similarly, we should have the proper intention. The purpose of your life is service to Guru and Gauranga. That is the proper intention. And Srila Prabhupada explained so nicely, just chant at least 16 rounds as attentive as possible. Make your home an ashram, a temple. Serve the sadhus. Serve the mission as far as possible. Keep Krishna in the center of wife and children. And your house becomes Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So it's not a very complicated thing. Just keep those, especially keep those basic principles in order. That you're chanting your rounds carefully. That you're serving the Vaishnavas sincerely. That we're trying to do something for the mission of the Lord. Compassion for the world. The duty of Grihastha is charity. There's nothing that's stressed more in the scriptures than charity for a Grihastha. And the greatest charity is to serve the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Because the mission of Lord Chaitanya is giving the greatest welfare to others. Para upakar. So just try to serve the mission, follow the four regulative principles, chant Hare Krishna, and you will be protected. In fact, Prabhupada said you'll go back to Godhead. Just be sincere. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. And even though Priyavrat was Grihastha, he still had the same humble relationship with Narada Muni. He was still serving those in the renounced order of life. Even though he was king, he never became proud. That is also important.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Maharaj, so many times praise comes. In the sense, if one is singing a nice kirtan, as you mentioned, and a new tune, and everybody says, Hari Bol. And that comes to the mind, because the mind is, you know, accepting that. What does one tell one's mind at that time? Because it's coming, the praise is coming. Nice lecture, nice kirtan.
We're just trying to be instruments to give the mercy of Prabhupada and Vaishnavas to others. We're not trying to give ourselves to others. What do we have to give? We're giving our life to others, but we're not giving some special blessing from ourselves to others. We're simply trying to deliver. But if we're proud, we're not really delivering much. The purity of the grace of Parampara flows most transparently through a heart that is humble and free from vice and free from ego. Yes? So we shouldn't be preparing so that we will get distinction. If we do, and then we get it, if we prepare ourselves to get distinction and we don't get it, we'll be frustrated. And if we do get it, we'll become proud. Yes? So whatever we should do, our motivation, our plan should just be to best serve. Not to become someone great, but just to best serve. That should be our motivation. And we should be very careful. Penny wise, pounds foolish. You get a little pleasure of distinction. But then in the future, you're going to fall down and be miserable and lose practically everything. It's not worth it. Huh? If we're after distinction, we have seen. We become so proud, we think we know better than everybody else. And then we're really fallen state. Yes? To think you're better than someone else is a very fallen state. It's an abominable condition for the soul to think yourself better than others. Do you think yourself more special than others? No acharya will ever pray like that. Huh? So if we're cultivating that type of mentality, that I will be something special, people will see me as something special, and I will feel myself as something very special and distinct, that's a very fallen condition. Just be simple. Be humble. And do what you can with all of your abilities, but keep that consciousness, not for distinction, but just to serve and to glorify the Vaishnavas, the Guru, and the previous Acharyas. That's our business, not to glorify ourselves. Distinction means I'm putting myself in the center. We want to keep always Krishna in the center. Does that answer your question? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.